What's up, everybody? It's LG Doucette here. You're listening to The First Mint, a podcast where I talk about NFTs and the world of Web3. The podcast comes out every Monday morning and occasionally on Wednesdays. If you like this content and you want some more, feel free to visit our Twitter page at The First Mint. Years ago, a friend sent me a link, as many do. People send me links all the time, as that's what we've been doing in the digital age, is texting each other interesting things. But this link was different. He said, check this out. You can pay for Bret Hart to make a video for you. And the link was to an app called Cameo. I don't remember what year this was. I feel like it was pretty recently, honestly, in the last like 4 or 5 years, maybe even more recently. But it blew me away because beyond just Bret Hart doing little videos for his fans, this was an entire platform that featured celebrities, athletes, other fantastic notable people, A-listers, B-listers, C-listers, whatever you want to call them, had all these great people, all these people that had tons of fans, and they were on demand. You could just pay them $100, $10, whatever they set as the price, and within a week or two, they would record a video wishing you a happy birthday, happy graduation, or just saying hello. I thought that that was so fascinating, and I became kind of obsessed with it for a while, honestly. Like, I bought some for some friends. Some people bought some for me. We bought one for Phil D, my brother, for his birthday video that we did at The First Mint just a couple months back. Cameo is a fantastic app, one I've been a fan of for a long time. And just recently, I found out that they are making an NFT called Cameo Pass, which is going to be an exclusive membership club for Cameo users. The NFT drops this week, and my friend Oliver Maroney, a friend that I've made through NFTs, through Web3, that I've known for a year, is on the show today to tell us about Cameo Pass, which is a project that he initiated at Cameo, that he went to bat internally at the company he works at to tell them that they need to make some NFTs and make something really great. And lo and behold, they have. This is The First Mint. Ladies and gentlemen of The First Mint, today's guest is an honor to have him on, not just because we've known each other and admired each other for a long time in crypto, but also because I've always loved the company where he is now the GM of Web3. Very appropriate that we refer to it as GM. Oliver Maroney from Cameo. What's up, dude? Great to have you on The First Mint.
Yeah, appreciate it. That's quite the intro. Yeah, the GM is intentional, by the way. I thought that would be, as my co-founder and I were discussing it, he's like, dude, this is right up our alley. GM, GM, GM. You know, like, it's like, so yes, I appreciate it, man. I appreciate the intro. And likewise, you know, I'm a huge fan of what you guys do. And I know we talked offline a little bit and we can get into it, but, you know, long admired the platform, what you guys have done. Your Twitter account alone has saved me hours and hours of legwork and hours of research. And to me, that's, yeah, like I said, it's just very unique. And like early on when I was in the Top Shot and I was in, you recall like very early beta stages where you're getting in line at like 1 a.m. or whatever the time was when they were, you know, delaying pack drops and things like that. And you guys had the updates, you guys had the scoops, and it helped everybody. And it really, like I said, it without you guys, I turned my notifications on during like pack drop days, and it was so helpful for people like myself to understand it and get it. And just like I said, I've listened to your podcast, you know, you've had guys like Wade's on, who's great. Like, I can't thank him enough. But yeah, I know we'll get into more of this conversation, but definitely very much appreciate you having me on.
Wow. Yeah, well, of course, man. That's great to hear that. And for anybody who wasn't around during those days, what Oliver's referring to is when we would tweet around midnight that there was a stress test and that you could buy a $9 pack if you got one, and it would result sometimes in like a $600 LeBron no-look three. So it's pretty wild times back then, where you had like minutes to like get to your computer or open up the screen in your phone and hope that it would work. So still similar days these days in crypto a little bit, but I feel like we're kind of finding our footing, you know, a little bit more, a little less stress. But hey, some stress. We're recording this on Thursday, Oliver, and guess what there is tomorrow on Top Shot? more stress tests.
Hey, yeah, I'm excited. I'll be there. I haven't stopped, man. It's a function in my life now. It's just like whenever a drop is happening, NFL All Day, and you know, NBA Top Shot. You know, I know we kind of rag on them a little bit, you know, the stress tests and the pack drops, but I think I'm safe in saying a lot of people in crypto and a lot of people in this space wouldn't be here without Top Shots. So I have them to thank. I have Roham and like just the entire team. It is extremely hard to run what they're doing. I don't care how big or how small you are. And I think people sometimes overlook the fact that no one is going to be 100% perfect. And there are mistakes that are made along the way. And I think they've done a fairly good job at, when they do make a mistake, owning up to it in some capacity and rewarding those who were impacted. And I think that's the most important part that shows that you care. And like I said, I wouldn't be here without Top Shots. So,
well, we're glad you're here, man. But I do want to hear a little bit more about that journey. Like, how did you even find Top Shot? And was that your first foray into crypto and NFTs?
Yeah. So Jack Settleman. I don't know if you know Jack Settleman very well.
Of course. Of course, man. Of course. Yeah, we've had him on the show.
Maybe 3 years ago. I want to say it was about three years ago. So first time I met Jack, actually, I was working at the Big Three. So we're to the basketball league, 3-on-3 basketball. Ice Cube founded the league. And I was working with Jack on an interview with Brian Scalabrine, who's like a friend of mine. Love him. And so that's how I first met Jack. And then from there, Jack and I started conversing more. We started doing sports card pack openings, card breaks. And that was probably 2.5 years ago. I don't even know how long ago. It was a long time ago now at this point. And we did sports cards breaks together. So like, I remember nights where we'd text each other and be like, all right, we're going to get the Knicks. Let's buy the Knicks. So we split the cost and we'd buy the Knicks in like a sports card break. And we'd hope to pull at that point, I think it's Mitchell Robinson. I don't even know who was the rookie at that time, but we're like hoping to get the rookie cards, the rares. It's very similar to Top Shot in a lot of senses. At least that like kind of immediate feeling when you're opening that pack and like that just excitement and anxiousness and just all the things that you feel. And so that's how we really kind of met and you know, got to know each other. And through that, he was like very early in Top Shot. I think he was one of the first, you know, couple hundred people or whatever. And at that point I was like, what is this? Like, why are you doing this? Why are you buying these like digital video clips? Like, I don't get it. I'm like so confused. And he kept saying like, I don't have enough time to explain it. Like he was kind of going around about like, look, if you get it, you get it. You don't kind of thing.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I think it was like, around like 2 or 3 weeks maybe before he bought that LeBron moment. And I'm like, look, I trust Jack. Like I've known him. We've done sports card breaks before. We've been pretty successful with it. It's been fun. And I'm going to make a bet on this. And I got in early. I think it was the first stress test that I was involved in. I don't remember exactly what stress test it was. I can't remember the date, the time, but I remember being in one of the stress tests. And I think the first one I actually got, it was delayed. It like got delayed like 4 times or something like that. And it was like 1 a.m. or like 12:30 at night. I don't even remember what time it was. I just remember it being like an accidental stress test. It wasn't supposed to necessarily.
I think you're talking about the one where Usman, who was the community manager at one point, had said there will be no stress test tonight. And then it happened like 10 minutes after midnight. And he was like, that's technically wasn't last, you know, that was technically the next day.
Yeah. I think I remember that one too. Maybe it was like 11, like I said, that's like my first memory, I guess, of doing the Top Shot thing. So it was shortly in that time span. And I just remember frantically going to my phone, going to my computer, going to every device I could possibly, you know, and just, I want a pack. And like, that was it. I got like 9 packs that night. I don't think I was supposed to. I apologize if I broke some rule or something. It's just, I don't even know what I did. I had 9 packs and I was just like, I didn't even know what was going on. Half the packs weren't showing up and you're like, I have no idea what's going on. And I'm getting these emails, $9, $9, $9, $9. And I'm just like, all right, we'll see what happens. And then from there, it was like every day, nonstop.
Yeah.
This moment's undervalued. This moment's, you know, and for me, coming from the sports card market, it's like rookies. Like I knew some of like the bets that would make the most sense. Covering basketball, I knew some of the players, like CJ McCollum, and I did this on my Twitter a few days ago, but you know, he was my entry into the NBA and covering NBA athletes. He gave me the time of day to interview him, gave me the time of day to like give me access. I mean, I recall Blazer games where the press team wouldn't allow me to cover the game because it was a Lakers game or a Warriors game. And I'd text CJ after the game and he'd be like, yeah, come on down. And he'd get me a pass and I'd go into the locker room and I'd get the access. And for that, I'm like forever grateful. But I know CJ. Well, I knew CJ well enough to the point where I feel comfortable making the bets on these guys, you know, like buying their moments and like just like knowing who they are as people. It helped me understand it better. And whether or not the price went up or down, I could care less. I just thought it was cool that I got to own moments that of players that were a part of my like journey into sports and covering basketball and stuff. So yeah, that's my entry into crypto and like how I got introduced. And from there, like I said, it was like game over. I'm down the rabbit hole.
Of course.
And then
what's the most degenerate thing you've done since then? Like outside of Top Shot? Because I know you're pretty hardcore, man. I've seen you in action.
I think we've messaged multiple times about things. Yeah, I don't like to admit this one, but I'll just throw it out there. And this is like not, yeah, Record Shop. I know you're is it your
brother? I have a Record Shop bag, and yeah, Phil's pretty stoked about that at the start. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. So I bought in because of Phil's hype around it, and I don't know how I pulled it off, but I was on the site right at the right moment, and I bought like 60 packs.
How is that the only? That's the same story you just told about the stress test.
I know, but I guess what do you want to hear? I mean, I've done all the things from, you know, Wade's Discord or whatever, you know, Squanchland, whatever you want to reference it as. I mean, every night I'm on there looking at who's minting what. I mean, I minted, gosh, this is a horrible one, but what is it, Crypto Dickle Butts or whatever? You know,
Crypto Dick Butts. Yeah.
There's a different one. Yes, yes. Plunge Father is mentioned it multiple times. So I'm trying to remember what it Dickle Butts. I think it's some sort of.
You're not
of
talking
like,
about qubits, are you? You're not talking
no,
about qubits.
No, no, no. I mean, qubits was one too. I mean, Yetis. I could go down Yetis. The list of those ones. Yetis was epic. Yetis is, but I think like more recently. Like the Dickle Butts one is just funny. I think that's what they term it as. I'm sorry. I wish I remembered, but it's just kind of like buried in my OpenSea. I think some people in our Discord, I think one person in our Discord did like a song off of it. And it's just, yeah, there's a lot of them actually. I mean, there's not like one I can pick out, but.
No, but dude, this is what we want to hear, man. This is what we want to hear in First Mint, you know, because we mainly talk about projects that are doing really well, right? Like we did like Pixel Vault yesterday and like Flovatar last week and lots of other great stuff. But it's like I've been getting this increasing demand of people being like, please tell me about all like the trash projects you've bought and never got your money back. And Record Shop is not in that bucket. We're talking like Crypto Dickle Butts and stuff like that. Like we're talking about like the borderline rugs / like you bought a bunch of Yetis instead of buying a bunch of cool cats or Bored Apes,
AP
you know, like
instead of Bored Apes. Yeah,
exactly. Yes, exactly. Like that's the kind of stories people want to hear more about, right? That you're just like, no, Apemon is definitely a better bet than Bored Apes, right? Like that's what people want to hear.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, I hope they want to hear it. Hopefully I'm not going nuts here. I mean, yeah, I there's a lot of them out there. I mean, there really is. I did mint a ton of Golden Pups. I don't know if you recall this project. I mean, I could go down the list. I minted like 30 of them. I don't know why.
it's like looking at somebody's like OpenSea or I guess MetaMask wallet, but like looking at their OpenSea account is just like looking at someone's like badges when they're a scout. But it's like it really determines your legitimacy, not just like good stuff you own, but also all this like if you have like 10 of like Golden Pups or whatever, that it's just like okay, like. You're a proper degen. Like you've passed the test, right? Like you've minted some crap. So
yeah,
you're good to hear. You're properly one of us at this point. I'd like to use that to kind of jump to the cameo part, not specifically the past, which we're going to talk about in a second, but if you can just tell me, actually, I'd love to hear first, you know, how you went from, you know, texting CJ McCollum and being like covering sports to working at Cameo, because I'd love to hear kind of that career transition went. And then if you can dovetail that into trying to explain to your colleagues at Cameo why you minted a bunch of crypto dicklebutts, that'd be great.
Yeah. Not a proud moment for that one. But in terms of I started covering sports when I was very young. Actually, middle school. I worked for free. Basically, the local newspaper had openings for covering high school basketball. It was about, I think it was 7th or 8th grade. I was in middle school, and I loved basketball. I wasn't good enough, but I loved watching basketball. It was just something I enjoyed watching growing up. And so I'm like, man, this is an awesome opportunity. I get to go to the games, and they paid me what the ticket cost was. So the idea is that they pay you to get into the game after you get into the game. So I'd borrow like $5, or I'd do some allowance, like chores or something. I'd get my $5. I'd go to the game. I'd pay my $5. And then I'd write my little, literally, we're talking 2 sentences to 3 sentences in the back of the Oregonian at the time. So the local newspaper. And so my job at that point was after school, I would go home, I would prep, I'd have both teams' rosters out, I'd write them out on two sheets. This is like very early email stages. I would track stats. That's basically what I did. So I really actually found an appreciation for stat keepers, because when you're doing that job, you're not actually watching the game much. You're literally just focused on who has the ball, who made a rebound, who made a shot, and you're not really watching the game as it happens, because usually when the game is occurring, you are jotting down the stat, or you're jotting down like a quick note. And so that's what I did for like, I don't know, a couple years. And I was lucky enough through that. It was like the golden age, or one of the golden ages, if that's even a term for Oregon high school basketball. But, you know, it's like Kevin Love, Kyle Singler, EJ Singler, Terrence Ross, Terrence Jones. Like, all these guys were coming up as I was doing this. So I was getting the opportunity firsthand to see NBA players before they were NBA players. And I built some relationships through that. You know, it sat with, you know, some of the people in their circles around them. I actually have a really close friend of mine, Noah, who played with Terrence Ross in high school, and is, you know, a very close friend of his, has worked on some business deals with him, et cetera. And so I built these relationships that brought me to the NBA. Slowly but surely went to high school, wrote some stuff on my own website. I just like kind of played around with like this concept of like covering athletes. And once I had done the stat thing for 2 years, it's like, I don't want to do any of that anymore. I want to actually tell these guys stories. I think they're interesting. I think they're unique. And what I kept seeing in articles and stories was this negative feeling. Oh, this guy made $20 million. Screw him. Trade him. This is what we should do with the team. Like all the analysis. But I felt like there was like this piece missing where like the player's side should be the one told. And so that's kind of how I approached journalism, and started to do some stories for a bunch of different publications. So I started out, I think the website was called Daily Fantasy Cafe. It's like a fantasy website. And they wanted me to do detailed stories on players so that fantasy players could feel like they got an in or a little extra. And so some of the first stories I did there were, I did one with Kristen Ledlow of NBA TV. I actually paid my own way to NBA Summer League in like 2010, 11. I can't really recall the date. I paid my way and I said, I'm going to spend a week with Kristen Ledlow and cover what she does. So I literally just kind of followed her around for a few days at Summer League, saw what she did, the note taking, and then I wrote a story on it and I got some quotes from her. I posted it, and like overnight, it was just a resounding positive experience. Like everybody was in my tweets and She was sharing.
Was that on Daily Fantasy Cafe that you posted?
Yeah, it was on Daily Fantasy Cafe, which is like, so now Daily Fantasy Cafe is like, whoa, we have something here. Like 3,000 people clicked on our website when we have 500. And I don't
you
mean
you blew them up, man. You blew up the cafe. That's great.
But that's kind of how it started. And I started to see all this positive momentum of like telling someone's story in like their own way and like being, I cared. I like genuinely care about what they were doing. And so I did the Kristen Ledlow story. I did a Terrence Ross story. I did a few others, Terrence Jones. I can't remember all the like connections that I had made over the years. I just basically was like, hey, can you do me a favor? Can I get like 10 minutes? Would love to talk to you about the season and what you're planning on and how you're working on things. And then that's where I met CJ, was through a story that I did on Kristen. CJ saw the story. I reached out to him. He followed me on Twitter, I think, and we started direct messaging. And I had known CJ, like, you know, followed him through college and stuff like that. But
that would have been early. That would have been his, like, rookie or sophomore year.
Rookie year.
Yeah.
So he was a nobody. Not a nobody. I apologize. That's not the way I should be framing it. He was not anticipated to be what he is today. And I know he just got traded, but a lot of people, there's actually a lot of websites. If you just type in CJ McCollum bust, it's like very apparent that people didn't think this guy would make it. And so my whole story and the concept with CJ was, hey, let me tell your side and get a little bit into the weeds on like what you've done, how you've improved, how you've worked on your game, you know, how you look at things. And I could just tell, like, within 3 minutes of talking to CJ, totally different person. Like, player I'd never met before, someone who definitely cared, not just about his on-the-court presence, but, like, off-the-court, doing things outside of it. And so I gravitated towards that and immediately wrote glowing reviews, stories about him. And that's not like, oh, CJ did me a solid, I'm going to write a great story on him. That's me telling a story saying, this guy was genuinely great, and I could tell that there was something there. And so that blew up, and I actually posted it on my Instagram the other day. But Kristen, so one of the questions, I took some fan questions for my story with CJ at the very end of it. And I one of the fan questions was, if you were in a game of horse with Kristen Ledlow, who would win? I know it's a cheesy question. It doesn't really mean anything to anybody. But he said me, obviously. Kristen's great, but I'm better, blah, blah, blah. And that quote got pulled by the Trailblazers. Trailblazers posted it. Then Kristen Ledlow that night goes on NBA TV and talks about the story and posts clips of her shooting hoops. And so this whole thing just spiraled into something I'd never, like, I was just trying to tell a story. I wanted people to understand the other side. And it really, like, naturally just flowed into where my journalism career would take me to. And so I started writing for, I think, there's like FanRag Sports, Basketball Insiders, and then more recently Dime Magazine and Up Rocks. And that's kind of how my story started. And I could get into the weeds of all the rest. I don't want to bore people, but.
How did you end up at Cameo?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I ended up at Cameo. I was let go from the big three. Look, COVID happened, and that's basically the end of that road. Cameo. So it's interesting, 2 years prior to that, I had spoken to Cameo and Steven, the CEO of the company, about Cameo very early on, and he was like, yo, we should chat, like, you should get on the app, check it out, try it out, that sort of thing. And I loved it. I thought it was a great idea. And so fast forward to, you know, being unemployed at the time, I guess you would call it, for lack of another term, but yeah, I was unemployed. I just reached out. I reached out to Steven, said, hey, this is, you know, something I'm thinking about. And went on their website, saw some job opportunities in sports. And I was like, this could be me. Like, I have relationships with people. I love working with athletes. It's not something where I like fanboy out over anybody, you know, it's been treated like a business for me for a long time. So I think there's a great fit. And I pushed extremely hard to get this position at Cameo early on. You know, so I think I went through like four or five interviews with them, and I wanted it. I turned down like four other job opportunities just to take the Cameo position. That's how bad I wanted it. And so they gave me a position, started out kind of from the ground floor in sports, worked my way up, and yeah, I guess here we are today.
Now you're leading the blockchain division.
Yeah, yeah, leading the charge on our Web3 efforts, I guess you could say.
Oliver, what were the other jobs you turned down?
You know, so when I was doing journalism, I also had jobs that kind of paid me like salaries on top of doing sports journalism. So I had always been working two jobs basically, I don't know, for a long time. So sales jobs, basically like sales or tech jobs. It wasn't like super intriguing or interesting, but just to give some background for people who don't know, I have a wife and two kids. So at some point when you're unemployed and COVID is going on, you have to try and figure out what you're going to do. And you got to, you know, pay the bills, turn the lights on, whatever. So I was very panicked. I was scared, anxious, like all the things that you could possibly feel. I had just bought a new house and like just trying to figure out like what I was going to do. And I just felt like I had failed, to be honest. So for me, it was, I had to apply to everywhere I could. It wasn't a matter of I had a choice, but when it came down to it and the Cameo position got further enough down like the pipeline for interviewing, I had a real strong feeling that I was going to get it. And I think in life, things just like work out. And that was one of them. I kind of hedged my bet, literally had job offers written out to me on the table. And I sat down with my wife multiple times, and thankfully for her, she was the one who was like, if you're not going to enjoy this, don't do it. And that's what helped me decide. Cause I was about to take a few of them because I just, like I said, at some point, you know, fathers are supposed to be the figure that kind of takes care of the household financially, at least in the way that we're set up. We were set up. Literally thankful, you know, 2 years ago today, I wasn't probably, you know, I wasn't in a job, you know, I didn't really have much going on. Yeah.
Damn. Quite the story, man. I didn't expect you to get so emotional on this interview.
Sorry. I didn't mean to be.
Damn. No, I like to hear it, man. I want to hear this stuff, man. I didn't know any of that kind of stuff that, you know, you were at in that position. I mean, COVID did that to a lot of people for sure. And I think, you know, COVID kind of made a lot of this, you know, or at least kind of opened the vacuum, so to speak, right, for a lot of this to happen, right, for all of us to come together. Yeah. And, you know, I think even with Top Shot and stuff like that is something that that made a lot of sense, especially when I found it. It was like, you know, we're watching like the bubble playoffs.
I remember that.
I was like, all right, well, this
that
is cool.
So fun.
Oh, you were there.
Yeah, I was one of the Zoom participants or whatever.
Oh, you were one of the
couple of the playoff games.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's so funny, that's so man. Fun. I honestly thought that was so friggin' weird. Those things.
I thought it was so strange.
Like it's just like to just because everyone's like doing something different, and that was one of the weirdest things. But the whole bubble situation was like, we're just grateful to have something to watch, honestly, at that point. Any kind of basketball to watch was a pleasure. But wait, Oliver, I can't let you get away with not telling me specifically where the other jobs were that you were going to take that you didn't. You don't have to tell me if you don't want to, but I just need to know. Just give me one that was like, maybe you'd be doing this right now.
There was a couple. There was one like podcasting opportunity that I had. I won't name like companies, but there was like a part-time deal. And I was thinking about, I was like, okay, I could probably make this. And it was kind of like a base salary / you know, incentives based on listens and things like that. Other than that, I had a position at a media company, media agency, that was kind of intriguing. I was kind of like, this could be interesting. I've never done this before. But once I just got into the weeds with these things, I just like, you ask them more questions and you kind of do the pros and cons list, and it's just like it just didn't make sense. And the only reason I would have taken it is literally out of desperation. That's basically, you know, like I said, what my wife was preventing me from doing. She's like, you're not going to enjoy this. So why do it?
Yeah. Well, so yeah. You clearly made the right call, man. let's jump to Cameo. For the uninitiated, I've been a huge fan of Cameo, like, ever since I discovered it a couple years ago, or whenever it launched. I think it's fantastic. To me, like, it's one of the applications that is like almost like an early predecessor of, like, this future fandom thing that we're doing in Web3, right? Like the whole Roham vision of, you know, all that, tokenizing your fandom, whatever. To me, like, things like Cameo are one of the first ones to be, like, using the internet and that kind of, not a decentralized model, but something similar to bring people closer together and to give them more access to people they really love, to people they really admire, celebrities, whatever. For the uninitiated, Oliver, what is Cameo?
Cameo is an app, and I guess our slogan is to provide the most personalized and authentic fan experiences on Earth. That's the tagline, I guess, of Cameo. When you really boil it down and make it as simple as possible, our app allows you to request a personalized video message from your favorite celebrity, person, actor, athlete, whoever it may be. We have a bunch of other ancillary products on top of that that we offer as a means to interact or engage with your favorite person. And essentially, it's just a medium in which you can request, receive personalized messages from celebrities, athletes, etc. So that's, like, at the nuts and bolts of it. You know, Edgy, if I wanted to get you a Cameo from Cole Anthony, I could go on the app, I could search Cole Anthony, I'd tell him what I'd like you to say. Hey, it's LG's 30th birthday, whatever, and, you know, sorry. I don't want to
say,
yeah, 30th. I apologize.
Someday I'll be 30. You're right. Yeah, someday I'll turn 30.
Okay. So I'm making this sound much less interesting than it actually is. But really what I would do is I'd go on Cameo, I'd type in Cole Anthony, I'd pull up his profile, and you can request your own personalized message from Cole. And I could say, hey, wish LG a happy birthday. Tell him his Top Shop moments are not where they need to be, you know, things like that. And so I think what you've seen as of the last 6 months, you know, kind of COVID-ish, obviously this business has exploded. You know, Magic Johnson, you know, gosh, I mean, I could go down the list of people that have joined in the past 12 months, but we have a lot of fairly large names that have joined, and, you know, people really seem excited about it. And in the crypto space specifically, you've got these, like, I don't know what you'd call them, but lightning in a bottle talent, where you have, like, a Hard Rock Nick or an Island Boys or some of these other names that people know in the crypto and NFT space very well, where you can request basically anything from them and they'll say it and do it. And people find them hilarious and funny. And I don't blame them. It is fun and hilarious. And for a very small fee in the scheme of things, you get a moment that's really memorable for a lot of people. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's access on a completely different level, right? Because even when you and I were kids, it's like an autograph was, like, the thing you waited outside for hours, right? And that was, like, the thing you had. You're like, oh, shit, man, like, Ken Griffey signed my jersey, right? And that was, like, the thing you would cherish. And there was no such thing as, like, being able to pay that same person, like, just $50 or $100 or some more expensive in some cases, but to pay them a little sum of money and they literally make a video where they're talking about you, right? And that's just, like, that to me is so cool. And we've used it multiple times. We even used it for Phil's birthday, where we had what's the guy from Jersey Shore?
Everyone loves
the situation guy.
There you go.
Yeah, we had him send a nice, and his, and what I'm actually surprised by with Cameo sometimes is that, like, some of them, you know, I've watched some of the samples from some of them, and some people are just like, you know, hey, what's up, Oliver? It's, you know, it's your friend Bret Hart. Happy birthday. See ya. Right. But others put so much effort into it. Like, I had a buddy who, his wife got him Tony Horton, like, from P90X.
Yeah.
Right. She got him a Tony Horton message for his birthday, and the message is, like, 4 minutes long. And he, like, sings and gives all these, like, motivational things. And the whole time he's just talking about my buddy, Alex. I just thought, I was like, man, Tony's, like, really putting some effort into these. Like, they're fantastic, yeah. Right? So I think it's also, you get to see, like, the different stars and athletes and celebrities. You get to see how they approach something like that, right? Like, how they approach getting paid, like, $100 to do a little clip. Like, everybody does it differently. And I'll say the situation in Jersey Shore, his was also fantastic. Like, it was really, really good, really well thought out from his end. So you know, I've clearly been a Cameo fan for a long time. And yeah, I think it's so funny. I also will say just one of my favorite kind of wrinkles that you have on there is that there's impersonators of other people.
Yes.
I think, I don't know if it's Cameo. I know there's other like Cameo competitors. So yeah. Apologies if I'm no wrong, worries. But I saw once, like, I think it's like a Tom Cruise impersonator. Is that on Cameo? You know what I'm talking about? Maybe it's a different star. Tom Cruise.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Like fake Tom Cruise, but it's like Tom, like the guy only does a Tom Cruise impression from like 2002.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like it's like Tom Cruise with like the sunglasses and kind of like kind of wavy bowl cut, like Mission Impossible 2 hair. And it's just like, that's quite the world we live in where you can get the Tom Cruise impersonator guy to send you a message for like $40. It's fantastic.
I mean, you know, it's so interesting. And you mentioned all the stories. I've got stories as well. Like my dad's a massive soccer fan, football fan. He's from the United Kingdom. He's born there.
Oh, wow.
And so I got him like a Tony Adams cameo. Tony Adams is like the captain of Arsenal, his favorite team. And he did like a 2-minute video. My dad's like in tears at the end of it. My dad never cries. Like, it's just like that. You can't, I would spend thousands of dollars on that. You know, it doesn't matter what the price is, like that I'll always have, you know? So for us, it's like, and getting into the Cameo Pass portion of it too, just not to move forward the conversation, but
no, please, let's chat about it, man. That's I want to hear more about it.
That's part of the essence of this. Like, we make these moments possible and we want to do the same thing in with Cameo Pass. And I think we have a variety of ways that we're going to be able to do it. And it's not just talent that we have on our platform. It's just some of the things that we have in our back pocket that many projects don't have when they start out. And I'm happy to get into, like I said, the Cameo Pass end of things. But that when you talk about those moments, like you giving your brother one or that, like that's the essence of what we're trying to capture here. And everything that we do at Cameo, that is what our goal, you know, to make it as memorable as possible. At our Cameo house in Beverly Hills, there's a sign, make it memorable. Like that is part of like the slogan and code we kind of live.
That's it. Okay. So let's talk about this NFT. So you guys are dropping Cameo Pass. By the time people are listening to this, I think that the pre-sale list I've gone through and the public sale will be imminent.
Yep.
So I can go on Cameo and I can just order, you know, LeVar Ball, $200. He sends me a great message. But with Cameo Pass, what are we getting that's different?
Yeah, so Cameo Pass, really think of it as an NFT project first. I don't want to separate Cameo from Cameo Pass necessarily, but I'll give you kind of a backstory here. So when we were doing Cameo Pass and like coming up with this concept and the idea and like what this could possibly be, every person, every consultant, every artist, they said basically the same thing, which is, first of all, why hasn't Cameo been in this space? This doesn't make any sense. Like, we should be here. And then secondarily, it was, you guys have all the things that these projects are looking for. Like, we don't have the art, but we have the utility side. Like, we throw in real life events already.
Yeah.
We already have.
Well, and you have all the, and you have all the celebrities.
And we have
everybody's like clamoring, like all the NFT projects are like, oh my God, like this, like, D-list celebrity liked my tweet, you know, just like everyone's like just fighting tooth and nail for like the most basic celebrity interaction.
Bingo.
And it's like, you're literally a platform where people have access to those people.
Exactly. And so what we're trying to do is like very carefully and intentionally launch something where we have a small tight-knit community that are able to access all the different perks and utility that Cameo can offer through not only our talent, but through our in real life events. And then I'll add on to this. We acquired a merch company about 6 months ago-ish called Represent. And so that's another portion of this. Like, LG, go back to all the different projects that you have minted and how many of them say merch at this, this at this, in real life this. And like, honestly, our team, like myself and a few others, we've been in this space like 1 year plus and we've minted hundreds of these projects. And I'd say like a very small percentage actually follow through with a lot of the stuff that they say. And I'm not saying we're going to deliver every single thing that every project has ever promised. But what I am saying is we've been very cautious and intentional about seeing what these projects have done, seeing where the pitfalls are and trying to poke holes in it and find ways to make it better. And so from our perspective, we have the merch. We have the access to the celebrities. We have in real life events. Like everybody, these three things are the key, I think, to success long term with NFTs and membership NFTs specifically, you know, utility based quote unquote NFTs. And so you put those things together, and our hope is that people see value in that, obviously, and are able to be in a very unique community built around our platform, built around some of the things that we can offer. And that's kind of where this all started. You know, moving forward a little bit, we didn't have the art. That's the thing that we were like, what do we do? And I was sitting there, I'm like, okay, we could do Lynx DAO. This is not a shot at Lynx DAO at all. Please, nobody take this out of whack. I love what Lynx DAO is doing. I think everything's extremely cool, and what they've accomplished is amazing. But I want, as an NFT collector, I want art. I want something unique. And so what we did was we said, there's really no like art pass. And what I mean by that is like you have a pass and the art is the pass. So part of the big like deal for us is the art is the pass. We went out and got three artists, some of them fairly notable, and you kind of, you know, if you're in the NFT space, you probably know some of their names. And we had
who
them design.
No, wait, tell us who they are. Tell us who they are. Just remind us.
Yeah, so Burnt Toast, the artist behind Doodles. Vinny Hager, the artist behind Letters and the Letters collection, one of the cool original Cool Cats collectors. And then the third one actually is on Cameo. His name's Luke McGarry. And he hasn't really dove into the NFT space too much. He's done like three or four pieces on Foundation, kind of one-off runs. He's actually pretty popular in and of itself. He's done a bunch of Coachella stuff. He's worked with Jack Black and Tenacious D on some of their imaging. So he's got his own backstory, but he's on Cameo too. So you can actually request him to do your own design, and he will send it back to you. And so, you know, I stumbled across his profile and I immediately was like, this guy is built for Cameo Pass. Like we have to get him in here. And so between the three artists, how we approached this was there's two thoughts here. So first of all, we want the pass to have utility, but secondarily, we've added some things into our pass that I think are also unique. And I don't want to go and like throw all these bullet points out at once and make it feel like I'm inundating people with information. But there are three passes with Cameo Pass. They are all equal. There's the same mint count. I'm not going to say the mint count just yet, but they are the same mint count. Each artist has designed one of the three passes. Each pass represents a phase of the day. So our three phases of the day are GM, GD, and GN. So we went to each artist and we said, hey, depict your version of this time of day. And that's it. We didn't give them any other direction. So the idea here is really about like the creativity behind the artists and them being able to create something around the time of day that they felt was impactful to them. And so that's what we've come up with. And that's kind of what Cameo Pass is about, from the art side and then from the utility side, how we're looking at it. And so people will be able to mint. The minting functionality is very different from your normal minting functionality. Why I say that is when you go to mint, you will be able to mint one at random if you would like to mint one at random, or you can guarantee yourself all three by minting three. That's the structure of how we we've built.
Cool. Okay. So that's quite the mechanic.
It's a lot of mechanics.
I love that though, man. I want to see more stuff like that, right? I want to see more people kind of pushing it. Do within each tier of artist, are there different rarities or they're all the same?
They all look the same. Yeah. So like I looked at all the membership NFTs. Most of them are just one image times 10,000. So we differentiated it enough, but I also didn't want to do rarities on each piece of art. I feel, you know, with these membership NFTs, I think there's enough already inherent value with it. And Yeah, it just overcomplicates things, I think, to an extent, especially with the artists, like trying to get them to do 20 to 30 to 50 to 100 pieces or different traits with them or colors or things like that. So we opted to keep it the same. And then, like I said, the three phases of the day, keep in mind, like that is something we're kind of thinking about longer term. I go into like any Discord channel nowadays, and it's just like the same group of people that are there at 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. are there every day.
It's true,
And
man. There's a joke. There's a joke in the First Mint Discord that it's like late at night at like 11 o'clock. I come in for my like end of day sweep, where it's just like if I've been working all day and I haven't checked Discord, that's when I just go and the last message in every channel is from me at that time because I'm just like catching up on people tagging me or I'm just like commenting on things from like 12 hours ago. I'm like, oh yeah, that's a cool NFT. Good job, you know. Like it's, but there's always like a layer of LG comes in late night and dominates every channel for like 10 minutes. So I feel you on that. Yeah, it's always the same people.
It's always the same people. And honestly, I don't have the time of day to be in a Discord 24/7 checking everything. And to be honest, on this project, we are not releasing Discord until after Mint. At
Why? Why? Why?
multiple reasons. First reason, we are very cautious about security and scams, and we really would it, we know that there are going to be people that do not have ETH wallets set up, that do not have are not crypto native, that are going to be potentially minting for the first time ever, and we don't want that experience to be negative for them in any way. And so that's like one big portion. The other portion of it is like we really want this to be community based. And in order to do that, I wanted to like flood out a lot of the Discord chatter, the FUD, I could care less how much is in there. But when I go into a Discord now with some of these hyped projects and some of the, and this is no disrespect to anybody, everybody does it their own way, I can't keep up. I don't even know what's what. And it overwhelms me. And I've already got 100 plus Discord channels. And I've heard it over and over and over again from so many people. Why Discord? Why? Why? It's so such a pain. It's this and that. Scam this. And I'm not saying I'm against Discord. I love Discord for certain purposes. And I think I would reference like Wade's Discord as a great example of how I feel a community should be built. It's a tight-knit group of people that feel very close to each other, that can message throughout any time of the day. We all have similar minds and similar thoughts and processes. And I think it's important to keep that like close, tight-knit relational aspect, if you're going to be doing it online. And so that's why we're doing it the way that we're doing it, is to kind of mitigate some of the outside buzz and noise and some of the things that occur within Discord before a drop, during a drop. And so that's why we're doing it. I don't want people to think we're like giving out early access spots to whitelist grinders or this or that. There's a lot to it, and I think we're trying to be as careful as we can about how we approach it and as careful as we can with the community that we want to build around it. So,
Very purposeful. I love that. Anything that's being done with that much purpose, man, I'm a big fan of. What chain are you guys on? What are you guys gonna be on?
it's ETH. It's actually a partnership
Mainnet.
with Mainnet. Yeah, OpenSea
Oh, great.
is a partner of ours for this. So
Wow.
they're assisting on some of the back end stuff for us. And the partnership is something we're super excited about. So yeah, that's what we're doing there.
Very cool. Very cool. So is it going to be on Mint Day? Are we in for a gas war? Is that what we're doing to get these passes publicly?
I think a little while ago I mentioned that nothing's perfect. There isn't really a full-on solution. I respect and greatly appreciate what Azuki has tried to do with 721A and like some of the processes they're implementing. And I greatly appreciate the Dapper Labs's and the Immutable X's and some of the other places out there that you can mint gas-free or relatively inexpensively. But we have decided to take this route with our project. And yes, for public sale, we anticipate there will be slightly Yeah, there will be a gas war. Yeah, we think that that's probably going to be the case. And, you know, it, such is life. I don't want to be rude or harsh, but this is the world that we are in. And, you know, I think we'll continue to try and get better. I mean, the only thing that we can do is be as transparent as possible. I'd be lying to you if I said we didn't think there'd be a gas war.
That's fair. That's fair, man. That's par for the course. And that's just kind of how these things go, you know? So I'm sure that's a decision you made with interesting, with good purpose. How did the OpenSea, what does the OpenSea partnership look like?
Yeah. So it's for this drop, with the idea that like it continues. I can't go into like too much detail on the actual partnership, but, they have been very helpful throughout this process. For people who don't know kind of what this project has taken to get to this point, we had gone to a lot of people, marketplaces, artists, developers to get the best of what we could possibly meld together from our experiences and what suggestions were made. And this is what we arrived on. So I'm super happy and like hopeful that people see the value right away. And yeah, I'm like super excited and, you know, just honestly grateful for how this has gone so far. I'm like beyond amazed at kind of like the reception of us doing this. Yeah, it's been a wild experience. I mean, I'm up at 3:45 or 4 in the morning and working till about 11 at night for the past 2 weeks. But it's been like the most rewarding two weeks of my life. And I hope that just continues. So
that's great to hear, man. I'll say, you know, Oliver, I have a somewhat similar story to you in terms of COVID ruining my previous career, which was in commercial film production. So we used to shoot like car commercials and stuff. And I always say that I traded one like 18, 20 hour day for a different one, right? Where it's like, you know, Same thing. I used to be up at 3 a.m. so we could go get the truck going over the top of the hill on the sunrise. You know, that literally I used to do that. And especially when you'd be in the summer and it's like the sun rises at like 4, right? Yeah. And that was fun cowboy shit and it was great, but I much prefer this where at least if I'm going to be working 20 hours, well, first of all, I get to sit at a desk, so it's a little bit easier, a little less exhausting, but also I'm connecting with so many more people and doing something that's far more fulfilling than shooting the same truck commercial that already exists about 1,000 times, which was fun. Don't get me wrong, but it was the same thing, you know? So, yeah, I feel you, man. And really excited for you guys and your team. Last question for you, internally at Cameo, like what was it like to, bring people onto this, right? It sounds like you already had a few people who were pretty into, obviously Cameo, a kind of forward leaning company, obviously what, you know, wants to create new stuff, but what kind of resistance, what kind of acceptance did you encounter while getting the pass together?
Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, I think around, you know, 8 months ago, I was telling my co-founder to get he was like, what NFT should I buy? And I was like, Bored Ape. And, obviously we know the story there. It's been interesting. You know, there are a lot of people who still are new to the space that don't fully understand it or get it. And that's fine. But there are some people in our company, specifically on our team that have really leaned in. And, you know, I point to like my counterpart, Ross. He's been a huge part of this from the get go. He minted Apimons and some Bored Apes and like knows the space very well. He owns Ghosts and he's very, he's early. He was one of the early adopters of a lot of projects and, he's got a ton of knowledge and experience, in this area. And so having him aboard, our engineer, Ben Eisner, who's now fully in Web3 as well, with our company, he's extremely smart, has minted a ton of projects, really understands like a lot of the nuts and bolts. He's done a ton of research on the 721A con. He loves Azuki, by the way. He gushes over it. And I'm sure he'd hate me for saying this, but just as I think you could call it like some sort of technical connoisseur or whatever that terminology would be. He was just so blown away by how they did things and loves the art and loves the website. And that he's very into the technical aspects of it. And so we've got, and then lastly, we've got multiple people on our team that, you know, they've been in the space, they know it, maybe not as well versed, but I think the most important part about NFTs and Web3 is being open to whatever comes your way. And I think that's what I've been so impressed with like some of the people on our team that may not be as well versed in NFTs. We've got a few other people, I won't name names, but a few other people on our team that have just leaned in. They've gone down the rabbit hole, learned everything they possibly can. They may not have even minted, but they have dove deep into the research and the inspiration and like what is good about this project. And, you know, I've spent tons of time, same with Ross and some of the other people we have on our team, just discussing the projects we minted and how it went. And so we have a really great team. I think this is, I've worked on a lot of teams. I've played a lot of sports with a lot of sports teams, and there is nothing quite like the camaraderie that we have between us seven.
That's great.
No, I know. Yeah. I'm trying to be sentimental.
No, but I like it, man. No, this is good. Like, but we don't get to hear this from teams minting NFTs.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like we don't get this part. We want to hear this. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's like one of the most recurring themes of NFTs is like, just invest in the people.
Yeah.
Just invest in people that know what the hell they're doing and that you're like, oh, this sounds like a great person. Then I want to buy the thing they're building. Doesn't matter if it's for Cameo or whatever. And it's just like, invest in teams.
Yeah.
Right.
No, and that's exactly how I've approached
so,
it.
So we want to hear this. We want to hear who the team is, and we want to hear, why you're bullish on the team that you guys have. Like, I think that's really important and something we don't hear enough about. Right. People often just talk about the product that they're building, but they don't talk about that part. Right. So I think that's really vital.
So we've had a ton of bumps along the way and things like that. And there are people, obviously, that have their doubts and questions. And, you know, I think for me personally, there's doubts on the outside and doubts on the inside through, you know, specific people. I'm not saying the company hates us or whatever. That's not the case at all. We wouldn't be doing this if that was it. But, I think for us, there's a lot at stake. I think I heard it earlier today in a spaces that I did earlier this morning, and they said, we're a Web 2.5 company. We kind of bridged that gap a little bit. Like, we have some connections there. It's not necessarily Web 3.0 yet, but it's like kind of there. And so I think we owe it to everybody to do something that is like a North Star gold standard for companies wanting to enter this space in a thoughtful and caring manner. And yeah, our approach from the beginning has been, we are going to be transparent. I mean, I know we're recording this and it'll be out later and things like that, but you will know everything about the mint way before. And you know, if anything else changes, we'll be the first to tell you. And that's kind of, you know, the Discord, we keep getting questions about Discord. We're just answering the question. The Discord will not be open until the launch is complete, and that is the way that we are doing it, and here's the reasons why. And yeah, so I mean, and last but not least, one member on our team that I think has been super impactful and actually brought me to this opportunity in the first place, Devin, the co-founder of Cameo, he built the app. He's moving, I mean, if this doesn't tell you all you need to know about this project, you know, he's spent a lot of his time on the Cameo infrastructure for since he's founded the company or co-founded it, but he is moving to Web3 on our team. And so I think that tells you all you need to know about like kind of where we are at with this. It is a very serious, it's a very serious endeavor that we're doing, and we understand like the value that we can bring. And like I said, we're very hopeful that people see the value, understand it, get it, and know us. You know, I think everybody should know who the team behind every project is. And I think it's important for people to understand why we're doing what we're doing. And we're not afraid to go straight there. You know, I've had questions about early access. It's like, who's getting early access and why? And to be completely frank and transparent and honest about it, we've given early access to projects that have inspired us, that have helped us, and if they were not here, we would not have the product that we have coming out. So that's our stance on it. It's not perfect. I don't think any allow list, whitelist, any of that is perfect. but I think we're trying to be as even and as upfront about it as possible.
Mm-hmm. So, I love that. Yeah, even if it's not a perfect methodology, being honest about it and how it's that you're doing that, I think is fine, right? You just need that transparency. So,
yeah.
Great to hear that. Oliver, breaking news for you that I just got by text.
Oh, no.
James Harden has, in fact, been traded. For Ben Simmons, goodness. Seth Curry, Andre Drummond, and 2 first-round draft picks.
Wow. Daryl Morey gets his guy.
Another person who's been on the podcast.
I love Daryl.
Finally.
I love Daryl. Actually, that's another person like I covered pretty early on. That's awesome. I'm super happy for both teams. I think this will turn out well. I like the combination of Embiid and Harden if that actually, you know, turns out the way we think it will.
I think that could work really well because Embiid is like the clear star now. And I think Harden is okay with not being that, but maybe has more, you know, a bit of a better system there to work within. But I love the idea of like Simmons and Kyrie, KD together. It'd be interesting come playoff time.
Should be
shake
interesting.
Out.
Should be interesting.
We're all about entertainment, man. We want entertainment, and we're going to get it.
We are, no matter what, you will get it in the NBA. That is for sure. One way or another, it is coming.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, Oliver, we're going to wrap up, but I don't know if you ever listen to the podcast, but there's a game we play with most guests at the end, and we're going to play it with you right now. And the game is called Would You Rather?
All right, let's go.
And you know how this works?
I've heard it.
I feel yeah, you know, so I give you 2 options and you tell me which one you'd prefer. Okay, yep. So we'll start with a really easy one. Okay, it's a really, really, really easy one. Oliver, would you rather be running Web3 for Cameo or Web3 for the Big 3?
Cameo.
Easy one. Easy one to start. Easy one to start.
Very
okay.
easy.
Would you rather, I'm assuming you're still in Oregon.
I am still in Oregon. I'm still in Portland.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Would you rather Blazers floor seats for like a season or Tony Adams flies over?
Oh, man.
And Arsenal is going to win. What do they win in the Premier League?
The Premier League or the Champions League or something along
Champions,
those lines.
What's the championship that they win? What's the name of the championship?
The Premier League, Premiership.
They just win the Premiership. Yeah. So Arsenal's going to win the Premiership. Tony Adams comes over and hangs out with you and your dad to watch it with you guys.
Oh, that's another easy one. Tony Adams, 10 times.
Tony Adams. Okay. Yeah. I guess if you're already kind of like a sideline reporter or whatever you were, it's just like you were already kind of there. Yeah. You already kind of did that. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Last one. You have the top. Like you have the top NBA players' phone numbers, like you have CJ, you know, like all the whoever your top 5 or top 10 are, you have all of them and they're very happy to hear from you. But most of the time, they just text you about the worst NFTs that they want to buy. Or the Blazers, like in the next hour here, trade for like a literal all-star team, like something just totally impossible. Like they trade for like Jokic and Steph and Giannis and Booker and like a full team. Which would you prefer?
I'll go with the former. I would rather have them texting me about the worst NFT projects. And I'll add to that answer just slightly. I have tried to take pride in not being a fan of one team. So I am not a Blazer fan. I do not consider myself one.
I am
a fan of specific players. So that helps your answer there. It was a little easier maybe than you would have liked it to be.
Yeah.
I apologize.
That's okay. No, don't apologize. These are twisted for a reason and we never know what the guest is going to say. That's the whole point.
So that's where I stay on that one. Absolutely. The bad NFT project. I think I've had a few players already text me about NFT projects. What about Haps?
From the NFT Instagram account? Is that what they're asking you about those? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, NFT Instagram account they screenshotted a Discord DM they got. And hey, should I mint this? It's like that was minted 4 months ago.
Oh my God, man. Yeah. Or just any Discord DM that's just like, hey, like, you know, this is minting right now. You better get in. It's the biggest Bitcoin flipper group or whatever, you know, like those things. I don't understand how people think that those are real. I don't understand. I still get messages now. People are like, hey, I got this. Do you think it's real? And yeah. I'm like, no, nothing you get in DMs is true. And nothing. Not a single thing.
And that goes to my Discord point a little bit. Yep. It doesn't. Yeah. You know, you would think people would be smart enough, but you know, look, if you don't know Discord, that's a tough thing to maneuver through and like organize. Yeah. So.
Yeah, I agree. Very cool, man. Well, Oliver, it's been great to have you, man. And good luck with the drop when it happens next week, when people are going to be listening to this. And, you know, I'll be in line. I'm going to get myself a Cameo pass and hopefully I see you in Beverly Hills.
Let's do it.
And that is going to do it for us today, folks. Thank you for listening. Hope you enjoyed that chat with Oliver. We went for a while, and honestly, we could have kept going for much longer. If you're listening to this, it's probably Wednesday, and that means that you already know that this week we have Basketball and Blockchain Week happening all weekend at the First Mint, so make sure you check that out. The links will be everywhere. Otherwise, we will see you next time on the First Mint.